All right. So today I really want to focus, today and tomorrow actually, on herbal actions. Now, we've gone through an extensive amount of discussion around some of the ingredients that are in plants, right? So the tannins, the glycosides, the flavonoids, all of the different, or many of the different components that make up the plant or the herb. The next place I want to go to is sort of a discussion of the actions of plants and their primary, secondary, tertiary actions. These are going to be very important when you get to the place where we're going to be creating formulations, right? And what I want to focus on is I want to give you sort of a high level perspective of what an adaptogen is, or an alterative is, or an antimicrobial. And then as we go through each system, like when we go through the digestive system, we'll go deep into the anti-inflammatories that are specific for the gut. And we will go deep into the bitter herbs that have a specific affinity for the digestive system. Today and tomorrow, what I really want to focus on are the overarching categories so that you begin to get a feel for the language that we're using. I mean, one of the biggest differences that I have found in integrative medicine, traditional medicines of Ayurveda, TCM, or you know, any of the great healing systems, and in herbal medicine in general, basically any system that ever used herbal medicine, including Greek, the humoral medicines, etc., had at its base this notion that something is driving the imbalance. Right? So whatever we're manifesting as dis-ease has at its root something that's driving that imbalance or something that continues to feed it. In my training, you know, as a physician, most of what we learned to do was basically to stop whatever the action was. And most of the time in Western medicine, we see this as an overactivity of a function, right? So if there was excessive inflammation, we're going to give you an anti-inflammatory. Now, it's not to say we don't use anti-inflammatories in herbal medicine, too. It's just that hopefully the way I'm going to teach this course and the way you're going to practice it is within a much broader or holistic framework. So when we come back, I want you to think, you know, every time you have somebody come in, you know, to see you as a practitioner, you're going to do a thorough case history. You have to know something about what they're presenting with, right? You need to know something about the underlying pathology. You need to understand, you know, the clinical presentation of it. You need to know those kinds of things. But then you're really going to focus on, you know, what's driving this? What's driving this presentation that I'm seeing, and what is getting in the way of this person getting well? You know, what is stopping this person from coming back to homeostasis? And that's where we employ diet, lifestyle, exercise, and certainly herbal medicines. And when we get to the place where we're devising formulations and treatment plans, you'll see how this all begins to play. Right now, we're still learning the fundamentals so that we can get into the specific categories. Now, if we were going to look at herbal actions, I sort of divide these into two categories, general and specific. So there's the general systemic plants or plants that have a generalized effect over the whole body. And I think of these as increasing chi or increasing life force or increasing vital energy. They tonify the system. They strengthen the body, okay? And the two classic categories or actions that we would thinking about in this case would be adaptogens and alteratives. Now, alteratives, you know, that's kind of the newer word for what people always call tonics. And I think it's because tonics, you know, spring tonics, things like this kind of got a bad reputation, especially in the United States in the late 1800s. So herbalists often use the term alterative now. I'm not fixed in the semantics of the language. Tonics, alteratives, adaptogens. The main point being here that these are working really in these kind of non-specific ways to nourish, nurture the body, and help the body resist the adverse consequences of stress. Okay, so they're more general and body-wise. Specifics are most of all the other classifications of plants, okay? So most of these will have a specific system or organ that they impact. Now, I'm going to go through. There's, you know, diuretics, expectorants, anti-inflammatories, antimicrobials, analgesics, nervines, you know, all of these different kinds of categories. And we're going to go through every one of them. But what I'm going to say is that nervine may be the category, or anti-inflammatory may be the category, but the herbs that you find underneath those will have a specific affinity for part of the body. Now, I've written just an example. Here we have anti-inflammatory and antispasmodic, okay? So maybe we're looking at the primary action being an anti-inflammatory. We want to normalize or damp down the inflammation. And we also want a secondary effect that we want to relax the tissue if the muscles or the smooth muscle or skeletal muscle is tense or taut. In this case, if you were looking for a digestive antispasmodic and anti-inflammatory, chamomile would fit the bill for both, right? It is both an anti-inflammatory, very specific to the mouth and the stomach, the bowel, and it's also an antispasmodic, right? Which is why it alleviates colic in children. So it also has calmative properties. But this one herb would meet both for the digestive tract. Chamomile would not be your best respiratory anti-inflammatory and antispasmodic, right? It wouldn't have the same affinity. So the uterus, if we were looking at the uterus, cramp bark reduces inflammation and it also eases spasms. So if you were looking for a uterine relaxant, a woman has horrible menstrual pain and cramping, you'd be looking for something to inhibit those prostaglandins, because we know that's what's driving most of the muscle, the pain, the cramping. And you'd want something that actually directly relaxed the uterine tissue itself. Cramp bark or black haw does both. Now, partly what I'm driving at here is also that whenever you're creating a formula, I'm going to want you to look for the herbs that have overlap, right? So instead of trying to have a gut anti-inflammatory like licorice and a gut antispasmodic like chamomile, and then maybe a gut vulnerary, something that would help heal, irritation or ulcers, that then you would look for something like meadowsweet. I want you to start thinking, as we're moving through this, how you would choose one herb that would have all three. And in the case I just gave you, vulnerary, if we added vulnerary up here, chamomile could be used to heal a lesion in the gut, could be used to reduce inflammation, and it could be used to reduce spasm, right? So when you're going to create a formula, I don't want 25 herbs in there. I want somewhere, usually 4 to 5 herbs are what come typically in most Western-trained herbalist formulations. In a traditional Chinese medicine formula, there may be 10, 15 herbs, a different system. I'm going to teach you basically Western herbal pharmacy and formula making. But this is one of the key concepts that I want you to grasp, is that in many cases, almost all, you will have, when you are looking to treat an individual, you will be considering what alterative and or adaptogen would be most useful for this individual, depending upon what they're presenting with. And then what is out of balance? Too much spasm, too much inflammation, not enough diuresis, not enough expectoration. What actions are you looking for in your plants? What systems are being affected by those, and then what plants? So it's, at first it'll seem a little tedious, and then it'll go very quickly. And in general, I just want to say that in herbal medicine, for want of better use of language, we use a lot of antis as well. In general, when it comes to function, the specifics are designed to improve function. Maybe instead of an arrow going up, that's a little deceptive, but it is, generals are to enhance life force, energy, vitality. The specifics are really to improve function and body chemistry, right? So that's really what we're looking at here. And you can have things that are overactive, which is what drives most of your anti-inflammatories, anti-spasmodics, antimicrobials, where there is too much of something happening, too much inflammation, too much of a viral load for the body to be able to take care of it, right? And that's when we use things that are to help suppress that or normalize it. But you also can have things that are underactive. You can have underactive function as well. And if you thought about this, think about this, somebody in like who's got COPD, who's got a chest full of phlegm that they can't get rid of. There's an overproduction of mucus and phlegm, and there's an inability to expectorate, right? So on one hand, we've got to use an anticatarrhal, something that'll remove, that will reduce the production of sputum, phlegm, or mucus. And we may need a stimulating expectorant to help force the mucus out and get it out of the lungs before it can develop into pneumonia or other problems. So underactive, maybe the kidneys are, you know, not doing everything they need to do, and we need a diuretic. Maybe the liver doesn't produce enough bile. We need a choleretic. The gallbladder doesn't release enough bile. We need a cholagogue. Okay? So maybe the bowels are very poorly functioning, and we need a laxative. But in general, you're going to think about these things in terms of function. How do you optimize the function? Is there too much of something going on and not enough of something else? And how do you create a formula around that? And that's where the magic comes. And that's where really the separation of herbal industry and you know, manufacturers, and that real gift of what it is to create formulations for your patients really comes in. Because most people, you have to individualize the formulations if you're ever going to get really that magical response. And I will tell you, over 30 years of using plants and using them in many, many people, when you get that blend just right, it's like magic for that individual. So I want to start diving into the different categories of herbal actions, but I wanted us to sort of set the stage as we go through this. Again, kind of high level, and then we'll dig down deep as we go through the different systems throughout the course of the Foundations program. So the first place we'll start is alphabetically. We'll use adaptogens. We'll start there. Now, you know, the adaptogens, this is a newer term, relatively speaking, when we think of how long herbal medicines have been used. Adaptogens really sprang from the work of a number of Russian researchers, Soviet researchers, who were investigating ginseng, as well as other plants, but had looked at ginseng as kind of this prototypical plant, and tried to explain what they saw in animal studies and also in just people's experience of using ginseng. And so in the 1960s, they defined adaptogen. That term had been used up to 20 years before that. But they said that an adaptogen is non-toxic. Okay, so we're really talking about something that has a big window of therapeutic safety, so that it's relatively safe to use. It's non-toxic. It increases non-specific defenses in the body, meaning that that we can't say, well, it does just this, and that's what makes you find this. That it seems to have this non-specific effect. And third, it has a normalizing effect on the organism, meaning that if something is low, that it raises it, and if something's high, it brings it back to its range. Now, in chemistry or in other systems of science, we call an ability of something to do this, that it's an amphoteric substance, that it has a normalizing effect, right? Now, there's a lot that's been learned about adaptogens since the 1960s, and so, I'm not sure that all three of those hold true. Could any of these be harmful in the wrong person if too much was taken? Very, very possibly. But by and large, I'd say that these kind of hold true, that they have a protective effect on the body when the body's undergoing stress, has a normalizing effect to some degree on the body, raising or lowering things, you know, helping restore homeostasis, and that in general they're fairly safe. And when we talk about something that I think most of us need in living in the 21st century, it would certainly be the adaptogens. This ability to help the body adapt to stress, whether that's physical stress, emotional stress, mental, environmental stress. And we may have to expand our understanding of adaptogens in this way. I mean, milk thistle, that is a great protector against many environmental stresses and toxins. Should that be an adaptogen? I mean, I think that we're, you know, as we gain our understanding and as the world constantly changes, herbalists must also be adept and fluid with their ability to look at these categories and not think of them as written in stone, but as sort of, you know, general guidelines for helping us to understand how plants can be used, especially in formulations when we're helping people. Now, many of these plants do have an effect on the neuroendocrine system or the hypothalamic pituitary adrenal axis. We're going to go into this in so much depth, you have no idea. When we get into sort of that whole adrenal system, looking at adrenal insufficiency, adrenal fatigue, adrenal burnout, the whole hypothalamic pituitary dysfunction, when we get into all the endocrine system, we're going to go over these in great detail. But many of them have this impact, which may be why they have so much possible benefit for us today. Now, many systems have categories for this, for these tonics. And again, these are adaptogens. Many people used to call some of these tonics. Like they would, you know, ginseng wasn't called an adaptogen, so to speak. It had its own definition within traditional Chinese medicine. In Ayurveda, many of these plants were known as rasayanas. And the rasayanas, not all of them would be considered adaptogens, but many of them have this overall rejuvenative ability. Bacopa is one of my favorite plants that is used in Ayurvedic medicine, and I find it has a lot of benefit for today with many people with memory problems, mental fog, children with learning problems, children with ADHD, that Bacopa can have just a tremendous effect here. It is a rasayana. I would say that it should belong up here under the adaptogens. It's often listed as a nervine. I'd say that it much more fits an adaptogen than any other category. In TCM, or traditional Chinese medicine, many of the qi or the blood tonics were used to nourish the organs and to enhance vital energy. So you'll see a lot of overlap when you look at the qi tonics or the blood tonics in traditional Chinese medicine and what we are typically calling adaptogens. In Western herbal medicine, most herbalists look at these plants as having something to do with the hypothalamic pituitary adrenal axis, and they tend to look at that and its interface with the immune system. So that's why you can see different herbs from different herbalists listed under adaptogens. You know, I'm not that rigid in my thinking. I'm always looking to expand my thinking and understanding. But if we hold that part of what this plant does through these non-specific kind of mechanisms, it's like you go looking for the one thing in it, you can't find it. It's a series of compounds that seem to have this overall effect on the human body. That they're non-toxic in general, that they're pretty safe for people to use over extended periods of time. In Chinese medicine, they would be considered superior herbs, right? Superior herbs are the safe herbs. Inferior herbs are those that have a narrow therapeutic window that are toxic, and those are actually most of our drugs. Isn't that interesting? Most of our drugs should be considered inferior drugs because they can be quite dangerous. So if we look through just some of the classic adaptogens, we of course have both of the panics, two of the panic species, there's more than this. Panics, meaning panacea is the genus name, or cure-all. That may be why this plant has had some problems with being taken seriously in Western science. Nobody likes panaceas or cure-alls. The Asian version and then the American version. Remember, you could have red or white of either one of these plants. I've just never really seen anybody use American ginseng and heat it and steam it like they do the red ginseng of Asian ginseng. So Korean red ginseng is very popular. When I was doing martial arts, that was the one that Master Kim really liked. He loved Korean red ginseng. And white ginseng was just the crude, unprocessed root, and the red ginseng had meant that it had been heated and cured. Okay, both of these considered the prototype adaptogens that help the body withstand stress. Physical stress, immune stress. There's been studies looking that it can help reduce your incidence of infections and upper respiratory infections. As a matter of fact, Panax ginseng has been shown to also help release nitric oxide and may also have some sexual invigorating effects as well, helping men with erectile dysfunction, libido. Withania somnifera, which you all know is ashwagandha. Somnifera, what does that mean, the species name? Sleep-bringing. So here we have a plant whose very name talks about its ability to relax. Where we have the Panax, which are considered a little bit more stimulating, here we have ashwagandha, which certainly is very useful for people who are under a considerable amount of stress. It can help protect from chemotherapy. It has amazing effects on the immune system. But here is one that's more of a relaxing. I think of this as the wired and tired adaptogen. For people that are just wired, and just never can sleep well, this is an adaptogen that I would choose for them. Rhodiola, rosea. This is from the northern Eurasia part of the world. Rhodiola, we're going to speak about at length, enhancing general well-being, improving mental fatigue, improving burnout, normalizing cortisol levels, easing depression. So rhodiola, and also profound effects on the immune system. So rhodiola, another classic. To me, this one is a little more stimulating. Those of you who've taken it know what I'm talking about, especially if you get up in those higher doses of it. It can make you feel a little overstimulated or even kind of anxious. So I want you to compare and contrast that with ashwagandha, what we just were talking about. Eleutherococcus, centicosis. Eleuthero, from eleutheros, which means free, and coccus, from the Greek, which means berry, free berry, and centicosis, filled with thorns, full of thorns. So it tells you a little bit about the plant itself. This used to be called Siberian ginseng. We no longer call it that anymore because it confused people. They thought it was ginseng. It's not. It's in the same overarching family, the Aralia family, but this is not in the Panax genus, right? Same big family, but not a Panax genus. This is Eleutherococcus. We call it now, the accepted name for this is just the first part, Eleuthero. And that's what we should all be calling it, though you'll still see it some places written as Siberian ginseng. You know, this is the adaptogen when you don't know if somebody's cortisol's up or their cortisol's down. You don't know which way it's going. As my friend David Winston says, Eleutherococcus are for those who work hard, play hard, and hardly sleep, right? So somebody who's got pretty strong constitution, somebody that's pretty young and healthy but maybe really has a lot of ambition, a lot of drive, but is pretty healthy. There's a few of you in here like that. I find a disproportionate number of physicians have this kind of personality. They work hard and they kind of play hard. ER docs in particular have this. But Eleuthero, you're going to learn a lot about. This is kind of a more neutral adaptogen. No drug interactions that we're aware of. It's the one you sort of fall back on if you're not completely sure that adaptogen. You just haven't got a good feel for the person yet. Licorice, glycyrrhiza, glabra, glycyrrhiza, This just means sweet root, right? So sweet root and glabra, you know from glabrous, right? So it's smooth, no hair. So this is the sweet root that's smooth, that has no hair. That's what its Latin name actually, or Greek name actually means. Licorice is an adaptogen that has many, many properties to it. It's an expectorant, it's an anti-inflammatory, it's a demulcent, it's a, you know, it's a normalizer, it's a vulnerary, it's, you know, it has so much activity to it. But licorice, I would say, is not non-toxic. This is one of those that if you got up there in high doses, you'll cause pseudoaldosteronism. You'll have a problem with people holding sodium, urinating out potassium, and driving their blood pressure up. So this is not, you know, remember when we went through the three things? The first thing the Russian folks said was it was non-toxic. Well, glycyrrhiza or licorice, when it is taken correctly, it's not a problem. But here you just have to be thoughtful again about that definition and not be afraid to challenge what we were calling adaptogens and what we know today. Licorice fits into this category because it definitely impacts the neuroendocrine and immune systems. And licorice is used when there's low cortisol, right? When you need to sort of buffer that, you need to support that. I think of this in a lot of people who have, you know, autoimmunity, people with chronic fatigue. Many of these individuals will benefit from the addition of some licorice. Holy basil, ossimum, sanctum, kind of ossium, you know, ossimum, the to smell, right? So you can sort of take what it means, the fragrant to smell, and then sanctum meaning holy or sacred. This actually is a very revered plant in Ayurveda and in India itself. And holy basil is not used really in culinary purposes the way that we would use, like, you know, basil in other species of basil that we cook with. But holy basil has not only an amazing ability to help with mental clarity and mental focus, it also has tremendous healing activity on the gut. So it is also an adaptogen, but a little bit more of that sort of mental uplifting can be very useful for people with sort of mental fog. The yogis used to take this to enhance enlightenment or their journey to enlightenment. So we'll learn a lot more about holy basil, especially as we move through sort of the neuro sections. Now, I mentioned these over here because these were not traditionally considered adaptogens, right? So astragalus membranaceus, this is an herb that we use for the immune system. I would have always considered this an immune alterative or an immune tonic. A lot of you know, friends that I deeply respect and other herbalists are listing this now as an adaptogen. And you know, I've put it up here because of that. I've also added Ganoderma or Reishi, the mushroom, because this is another one that I find many, many, many herbalists are calling adaptogens. These have a pretty profound activity on the immune system itself. And both of them can be very good for helping people who are more prone to infections, who get sick more often, who may have some underlying constitutional problems that make them more vulnerable to, like, respiratory infections, especially the Ganoderma. So if we're talking about helping the body adapt to stress and there's an underlying constitutional problem that makes somebody more vulnerable to stresses of cold, stresses of, you know, life, and they tend to settle into a certain place, these may indeed be adaptogens. These are all of these, though, I want you to think of in terms of even licorice, with the caveat I gave about it. But I want you to think about these things more in general. If you were going to create a formula and somebody was experiencing a lot of stress, biological, mental, emotional, environmental kinds of stressors, which one of these would have the most impact on that individual based on their presentation and your understanding and their perception of what's driving the illness, okay? So adaptogens, again, we're going to do the deep, deep dive here, but this is sort of this broad general, and you're going to find that either an adaptogen or an alterative is going to go in almost all of your formulas, OK? Okay? All right, so we've finished adaptogens. If we want to think about the other category of general herbal actions, it would be alteratives. Now, I admit it, you know, you're going to hear me slip up a lot, and I'm going to use the term tonic because that is sort of, you know, the way I think about these things. I think about these as herbs that tonify, strengthen, and restore. Many of these herbs are almost like food herbs. Some not, but many of them fall into that category. Nutritives like nettles or burdocks, things that could be easily consumed on a regular basis, eaten or juiced and drank. So for me, when we use the word alterative, we're basically saying something that gradually restores the function of the body. Now, adaptogens, as you see, there'll be specifics for each one, but these alteratives, tonics, I think of them as not only being general, you know, for the entire body, but I do think of them as having some specificity. So when I think of the GI system, obviously I think of dandelion root, right? Taraxacum. Taraxacum actually is the old name for bitter herb. That's what that meant. So taraxacum means bitter, and it's sort of that prototypical bitter herb. Officinale, meaning that this was official in the pharmacopoeia. So taraxacum or dandelion has this really old sense of having this kind of bitter notion. You could eat the roots, you can juice the tops, the entire plant's edible. So when we're thinking about this again, you know, many of these herbs do three things, one or more of these three things. They either enhance nutrition, they have some nutritious piece to them, they enhance metabolism, and I don't mean like revving up your metabolism like caffeine, but they impact the way the body is able to metabolize, and or they enhance elimination, whether that's expectoration or you know, urination or defecation. They're enhancing the eliminatory processes, okay? So when we think of digestion, you could have dandelion here because it kind of gets everything going, and you could, you know, it's a bitter herb, enhances, you know, bile production and bile flow from the gallbladder, which enhances elimination from the body. You can eat the roots, you can eat the greens, it's all edible. Burdock, also known as gobo, is one of the main sort of starchy vegetables, if you will, in the Okinawan diet. And this has been written about, you know, Okinawans are very long-lived, and when you look at a number of their dietary staples, you know, sweet potatoes, one, a lot of people think sweet potato, Okinawa, but yeah, that was actually one of their big staples that changed after the last World War, and it's moved more towards rice and noodles, but they think that that may be also why they're not seeing quite the same health that they used to see, because the sweet potato made up so much a part of their diet. But the other big piece that is still part of their diet is burdock root. So again, most people in the United States have never heard of it. You can buy it at you can get it at any Whole Foods. Trader Joe often carries it, but you can even find it in a lot of grocery stores, and certainly you can find it in Asian grocery stores where it's consumed widely. Burdock has all kinds of eliminatory effects on it. It's really rich in inulin, which is a prebiotic. So is dandelion root. Both have inulin. This is a great source of, like, you know, the fructooligosaccharides and the ability to feed the healthy microflora inside of the gut. So these are alterations. When you're just trying to enhance digestive function, that's the main problem somebody's coming in with. You're looking for something that sort of builds and strengthens that system. These are two classic alteratives that you could be thinking of. For the immune system, you notice where they were on the adaptogen chart last time? I usually put them under the alteratives because that's how I think of them, as alteratives for the immune system. I think of these as the things that restore function, that enhance the ability of the immune system to be agile and flexible and respond to infectious organisms, and possibly even to help maintain that Th1, Th2 sort of balance, right? you know, the autoimmune versus kind of the allergic, the infectious versus the allergic component of the cell-mediated immune response. And I think these are big. Reishi can be consumed on a regular basis, and astragalus can be easily added to soups. And you know, that's the easiest way to take it because they, come on, let's face it, they look like tongue blades. When we go through and actually go through the systems and we pull all the herbs out, you'll see what all of these look like. But the astragalus, you cut it into pieces and then you can throw it into like a pot of rice. And as the rice steams, the astragalus will enter into the rice. You can throw it into soups and stews. Another easy way to get it. And then, of course, you just remove the tongue blades, the astragalus, and consume the food. Musculoskeletal is a little trickier when we're looking at alteratives. You know, you could think of something like it as an alterative, something like bone marrow, right, which is not an herb, but bone marrow is rich in those glycosaminoglycans that really feed and nourish our own joints and that. And, you know, when I was a kid, everybody used to take, the knuckles and bones, the knuckle bones from pigs or cattle and beef, and they would use those as their stock base. So they would cook those for hours and hours on end along with some vegetables and other things, and that would provide the basis for your soup. Nobody does that anymore, and people freak out about bone marrow. But when you think about it, what's better, taking like glucosamine and chondroitin in a pill or consuming things like marrow in your food? I think it's some interesting questions. But for the musculoskeletal system, it's a little tougher when you're looking at alteratives. Schizandra, which technically is like an adaptogen, it's used as an adaptogen or classified by many, it has a profound effect on the liver and physical function. But it does seem the reason I put it under like alteratives for the musculoskeletal system is that the data looks very interesting for its ability to help one recover. If you exercise and you're really using those muscles, for the ability for your body, the muscles to recover more quickly, at more fast. Schizandra comes under here in my book. Burdock also is used for musculoskeletal, and this is probably because of its ability to enhance elimination and because of its nutritive properties. Nervous system, we have a lot. The alteratives that I would focus on here are skullcap, oats, and bacopa, which I mentioned earlier. Now, skullcap is a favorite of mine. I think it is underused. I grow it in my garden, so you know you've seen it. You've seen it growing in my garden. I love to drink it. I think it has a very mild taste when it's taken fresh. Scutellaria means sort of like shield shaped, and lateriflora means that the flowers are on the lateral or on the side of the plant. Sometimes you'll see it as folia, but it's flora. We're actually looking at the flowers, not the leaves. Skullcap, to me, for people that are just on edge, that everything just they're just so irritable, everything just irritates them, and everything's just on edge, that is the alterative nervine for them. Skullcap, oats is another one very close to that. When people feel edgy or anxious and have a hard time concentrating, like they're always bouncing from one place to the next. A number of my students over the years have called it meditation in a bottle. Very, very safe. It's just the green seeds from the oats, from the wild oats, that's taken and either tinctured or processed fresh or just, you know, very freshly dried. Both of these. And then bacopa, which I talked about earlier, bacopa being one of those rasayanas that is in Ayurveda used as sort of a mind rasayana, a mental rasayana for helping with mental fog, with memory, children with learning disabilities, anxiousness. It's often combined with gotu kola, where the combination is used for anxiety. So all of these sort of nourish and feed the nervous system. You could add St. John's wort in here as well. People think of it as an antidepressant, which it is not. It is a nutritive for the nerves. Oats to me is the most nutritive. Skullcap right behind it. I'd put, you know, I'd put St. John's wort right in there, right beneath that. But St. John's wort could come in here as an alterative, restorative for the nervous system. Repro, raspberry leaf is sort of the prototypical, and I know everybody goes, oh, it's used for pregnancy, and the studies didn't show much one way or the other. And I'm like, well, yeah, it was used in pregnancy, but one of its main uses for raspberry is for just feeding and nourishing the uterine tissue. You know, if you have somebody who has heavy periods and they're 14 years old and their cycles are irregular, you could put them on Chase Tree. Of course you could. You could put them on Vitex. But raspberry, actually, as a tea, is a very healthy, nutritive for women who bleed every month. You know, I used to make a combination of raspberry, nettles, and a little bit of mint. And I'd make it up. I'd make it as sun tea. I'd keep it in the fridge. I'll never forget, I come home one day, and, you know, Makoche knew what it was, that I drank it. And, you know, and he would drink it sometimes, too. He drank mostly red clover mixed teas. But he had his little friends over to the house one day. And I don't know, he was probably 8 or 9 years old. And the kids were looking in the refrigerator, as young boys will often do, looking, you know, to scavenge whatever was in there. And he says, the boys are like, well, what's that? You know, pointing to my jug. And he goes, oh, that's my mom's. And the other little boy goes, is it beer? And Makoche said, no, it's not beer. It's her moon tea. And the other little boy goes, what's moon tea? And Makoche goes, you know, every month when women have all that bleeding and everything, that's her moon tea. And at which point all the boys went, ew! And like they closed the refrigerator door and ran out. So it's typical little boy story, but I've never forgotten that. And also that association that even as a young child, that sort of moon tea, right? That connection between menstruation, moon cycles, lunar phases, and then these herbs that normalize. I drank that for years. I mean, probably 15 years, 18 years, just drank it. Never had a cramp, never had an irregular cycle. You know, Kiara born at home, easy, very little discomfort. So for me, when I think of these nutritive tonics for the uterus, I think of raspberry, I think of nettles, also shatavari, which is much more common in India for tonifying and strengthening the female reproductive system. And this is for women after pregnancy, women who are breastfeeding, but also, you know, she who has 100 husbands. I mean, that's also one of its kind of common names. Speaking of also sort of its effect on the sexual function and her sensuality. So shatavari and raspberry nettles all up here I would put as sort of alteratives for the female reproductive system. For the male reproductive system, I think, you know, we're still looking at saw palmetto. Not so much for young men, but for men maybe in their early 50s. The saw palmetto, most of the studies that have been done on it have been primarily looking at its comparing it to a drug for benign prostatic hyperplasia. So we're going to give this drug, or we're going to give saw palmetto to men who have symptomatic BPH, and we're going to compare the effectiveness. It's an herb. It's an alterative. It's a tonic. It's best used really when men don't have many symptoms. As they age and they may begin to have some enlargement of the prostate, before they have lots of symptoms and you've got to give them a drug, this is where you would use the saw palmetto. Serenoa, repens is the botanical name for this. Serenoa is the name of a botanist, actually, who is this plant is named after. And the berries, I used to have men drink saw palmetto tea down in Las Cruces. A lot of the elder Hispanics, if they came in and you were going to give them saw palmetto, they didn't want to take it as a tincture. They didn't want to take it as a capsule. They wanted to take it as tea. I think it's noxious. It stinks. It smells bad. It tastes awful. And they would drink it, and they would swear that it helped their urinary problems. Now, I do want you to say, I want you to contrast with the fact that we're told that saw palmetto doesn't work unless it's a standardized extract. You know, that's standardized, 80 to 95% of the fat-soluble properties, you know, of the phytosterols and the lipophilic components and all of that. And yet, people who drink it or use it think that it works great. And I actually wonder, when they first started thinking about saw palmetto for enlarged prostate, they were looking at old ethnographic data of people using this hundreds of years ago for the treatment of hesitancy in older men. They clearly were not taking it as a drug. They were using it as a tea. So saw palmetto I would put up there for men. Respiratory, couple of them here. Eyebright more for upper respiratory. So for somebody who has a tendency towards allergic kinds of activity, Eyebright euphrasia is a wonderful, wonderful plant. And I mean, there's butterbur and other things that you can use really as a strong treatment. Eyebright has been used for a very long time for people who have a tendency to build excessive mucus and phlegm in the upper respiratory tract. Mullein is really, to me, much more of a lower respiratory tonic for people who have a kind of constitutional weakness in their chest or their lungs. I love mullein. I love mullein tea. Mullein grows all over where we live. It grows everywhere. But mullein, a wonderful sort of alterative or tonic for the lower respiratory tract. The skin, I'm talking about internal, not topical here, but Oregon grapefruit, sarsaparilla, and burdock are three real classicals. And I would add red clover up here. I would put red clover. All four of these traditionally used for people who have skin eruptions, right? So Oregon grapefruit we're looking at internally for psoriasis, but possibly also, you know, for eczema. Smilax or sarsaparilla, that is the oldest of all of the skin remedies. It was the spring tonic that was used in the United States. We're going to talk a lot about it. It's a fascinating plant. But again, useful probably because of its effect on the GI system for how it's also preventing skin eruptions. And then burdock and red clover. Red clover was the one that I used to just make as a tea. You know, red clover flowers. The blossoms. I would make tea, sun tea out of it, and just keep it in the fridge. And I was very shocked that I had been giving my son all of this red clover tea all these years, and then I found out it was being used for menopause. Just be clear, they're isolating isoflavones out of the leaf. They're not using the red clover blossoms the way they were always traditionally used. Very good for the skin, good for elimination, red clover and burdock. Urinary, dandelion leaf, and cleavers, both of these essentially are quite safe to be used long-term to strengthen the urinary tract and to have a mild diuretic activity to them. And cardiovascular, which I should have put up here, but I forgot about it when I was writing on the board, you would think for your alterative or your tonic here, you would think of hawthorn, but you could also think of garlic more for the circulatory system, right? So hawthorn more for the cardiovascular, for the heart, to tonify and strengthen the heart, especially as it ages, and garlic perhaps more for the circulatory system and its effect on plaque, atherosclerosis, and its very mild blood pressure lowering effects as well. So again, this is kind of an example of alteratives. As we go through each of these systems, you're going to hear more and more about each one of these plants.